This is a People First Radio podcast.
An end to pet bans in rental units, the right for renters to install AC in their units, and vacancy controls in areas where housing is in high demand. These are some of the changes Downtown Eastside service provider First United is calling for in BC. They've put out a platform of proposed changes to the Residential Tenancy Act. I spoke with staff lawyer Vincent Shee. You are calling for changes this month to the rules that landlords and tenants follow here in BC. You've kind of broken down the broad strokes of it into six bullet points that we're going to get into. Maybe before we get into some of those, why now for this package of reforms?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're at the end of summer. We're experiencing kind of the last waves of good weather. And one of our big pushes this year is kind of focusing on the right to cool. And we want to like hammer in the point that it's important that tenants be able to have air conditioning. So that's one big thing. But also, this is actually our second law reform platform. So we've come out with one last year, which is our first platform. And I think this is just something that we want to do every single year to keep government accountable, because we have seen government take positive steps, partly as a result of our platform. We've been in talks throughout with government officials trying to make things work. And I think that it's a really good tool, not only for them to see what policies might be helpful, but also for the general public to learn more about what's possible and maybe help us like send that message to people in power.
You said there that one of the things you're calling for is to amend the Residential Tenancy Act to confirm tenants' rights to install cooling equipment, to prohibit clauses that restrict the use of cooling devices. Can you give me a sense of, is this happening right now? Are there people who are renters and they're kind of being forbidden, or they're afraid of installing some kind of AC in their unit?
Yeah, we've definitely seen some instances of that in our frontline work. And, you know, the RTB has kind of addressed this issue in one of their internal policies that just says that if landlords make you sign a tenancy agreement with a provision that says you can't use air conditioning, that's probably unconscionable and unenforceable, you know, unless there's some sort of, you know, building issue that they can't accommodate it. For example.
So is that to suggest that right now it's probably the case where if you are living in a really hot apartment and you want to install an air conditioner and your landlord doesn't like that and they kind of take you to the board, you're probably going to have a pretty good case, but you are calling for changes that kind of explicitly say this is allowed for people to do?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you can hear, but my windows are open. Because it's really, today is one of those warmer days, even though we're in September. And it's definitely one of the issues that comes up in a tenancy, especially in the summer, because there are certain buildings where, you know, there are older equipment, etc. And, you know, some landlords might be afraid. But I think what we're calling for is to kind of make it a RTA provision, like a Residential Tenancy Act provision, that prohibits landlords from interfering with tenants' use of AC. And that's kind of just putting that RTB internal policy in the statute specifically, just to beef up those protections. And actually, this is something that's already been implemented in some cities. So in Port Moody and in New West, they've had like almost identical provisions in their bylaws. And in fact, in New West, they require that landlords apply to the city to, in order, if they want to deny people their AC use. So I think this is a really good time for that.
In the wake of the statistics we heard coming out of the heat dome a few years back, that hundreds of people had died in the province, do you feel like that has given momentum? Have we seen, are some of those changes you just referred to because of that? Is there still maybe the momentum from the kind of magnitude of that tragedy to to get this particular clause more out there and enshrined?
Yeah, I definitely think that the heat dome is one of the catalysts for all the discussions we're having right now. I'm sure your listeners are familiar, like 619 people died in that event, and it disproportionately impacted vulnerable people. So like people who are older, people with disabilities, indigenous people, with people with chronic diseases. The city of Vancouver itself says that type of extreme heat event will be four times as likely by the year 2050. So I think, to me, it's like not cooling is not no longer a nice to have. It's not really optional. For us, it's really a health and safety issue. And yes, like the Port Moody and New Westminster bylaws, I would say, is partly to do with that. As well, you know, the RTA provision we're kind of talking about is kind of a baby step, right? Like it's already happening. We're beefing up with the protections at the RTB. But I mean, the ultimate long-term goal is to require maximum temperatures in all housing, like as a matter of maintenance standards. So in the same way that there's heating requirements for buildings, we want cooling requirements. And you know, new buildings now are required to have cooling under the new building code. So it doesn't really make sense that cooling is now a minimum standard, but people who can't afford to be in a new building aren't afforded those protections. And this is kind of the background behind why the city of Vancouver actually passed a motion last year in November asking the province to amend the Vancouver Charter. So the Vancouver Charter gives Vancouver its powers, and that's the only, Vancouver's the exception. Like everybody else is governed by the community charter, which already has the power to regulate cooling, but Vancouver doesn't. So the Vancouver has asked the province to give it that power to regulate maximum temperatures in their bylaws. And they've referenced specifically the heat dome as one of the issues, kind of it being a life-threatening condition. And so, you know, the city has the will to kind of move forward with this. We haven't seen the province do anything with that yet. And so we're urging the province to agree to the request and for all municipalities to really think about what they can do for tenants in light of climate change.
So, amending the Residential Tenancy Act to confirm tenants' rights to install cooling equipment is just one of maybe, it's fair to say, six bullet points that you've broken down your advocacy calls for. Another one is around you're calling on the RTA, the Residential Tenancy Act, to prohibit pet bans in rental contracts. I'm wondering if you could tell me on that front, maybe what's the situation right now for renters with pets in BC? How does it maybe compare to other provinces?
Yeah, so right now in BC, landlords can kind of do whatever. They can say no pets or pets. I think your listeners are probably familiar with that. I myself dated this guy who had a dog. And so I experienced kind of firsthand how, you know, like within our budget range, our available options are decimated because of just having a pet. And I think it is something to really reconsider because Ontario is a really good example where that has worked. So they've removed pet bans altogether. And it's worked because, like BC, existing mechanisms already exist to deal with pet issues. So if you have, you know, if landlords are worried about damage to property, we have pet damage deposits. They already have the right to compensation when something happens, you know, when your pet pees on the ground and the floor is messed up. If your pet is disturbing neighbors, for example, there's already an existing mechanism to end a tenancy. So I think removing pet bans is just important to kind of take away the big hurdle that we have in this province. So, you know, housing costs are out of control. Pet bans are just another hurdle for those of us that have pets. And I think That's kind of evidenced by our BC eviction mapping project. So in our data set, a lot of respondents consistently report that pet bans make an already difficult process harder. They say they're forced to be displaced or become homeless, or they're forced to let go of their pet, and that's just not a reasonable choice to make. Like we shouldn't be forced to make that choice. And yeah, like the SPCA also says that lack of pet-friendly housing is one of the primary reasons that people surrender their pets to the shelter. So there's like a lot of these ongoing effects, not just within the tenancy.
Another thing you're calling for is so if I'm a landlord and I want to evict a tenant, you're suggesting it would be beneficial for us to enshrine in laws that I would need to apply to the RTB to evict a tenant. I would need to give specific grounds for the eviction and give some supporting evidence. Can you tell me maybe like what is the situation now if I want to evict someone? What do I have to do such that that policy I just suggested is what you're calling for?
Yeah, I think one of the big issues that we're seeing is a lot of times the tenant is kind of on the back foot. What happens right now is that if the landlord wants to evict you, they first have to give you a notice, obviously, a notice of eviction. And in the notice, they're supposed to kind of describe the reason why they want to evict you, right? So is it because you're too loud, that you're not paying rent, etc.? And in response to that, the tenant, if they don't like that or they disagree, then it's kind of on them to apply to the RTB to dispute that. And if they don't, then after a certain amount of time, it's deemed accepted. The eviction is deemed to stand. And so there's kind of like two main issues that we're seeing from that. One is that, tenants are vulnerable to begin with. They're in a more vulnerable position. From our data set, we see that 70% of all evictions are deemed accepted. It's not that the landlord and the tenant are on equal footing. It's that 70% of the time, people are either they don't know their rights, or they're scared of the landlord, what the landlord might do, or they just don't have the time or resources to fight it. The other issue is, when the landlord's giving you the notice, a lot of what we're seeing is they're being very vague about why. Like they're supposed to kind of describe, like write in a box what the allegation is, like what the tenant did. And a lot of the time, that's not clear. And so when the tenant is applying to dispute, the process is that the tenant is supposed to give evidence first. And so they have no benefit of seeing what the landlord is going to eventually say. They don't know what evidence they're going to call. And so they're kind of going in blind. So like, okay, like, are you evicting me for being consistently loud to people? And what specific instance? Like, I don't know if I was a tenant, I wouldn't know what evidence to call. I don't know what which witnesses to call. So, for example, and so the result really is that the tenant has no opportunity to think about their case, and that's kind of the core aspect of procedural fairness. This is something that we're really hammering down for the RTB. The RTB has exclusive jurisdiction, which over tenancy matters, which means that the only way that you're able to deal with disputes with your landlord is through them. And like, if it doesn't work out, you might be homeless. So it means that the RTB really has to be fair in when they're deciding the cases. And the courts have been repeatedly clear that that needs to happen. And one of the core aspects of procedural fairness is that you're given the opportunity to know what the other side is saying, and then being able to adequately prepare to respond. And so what the existing RTB rules and their practices, it doesn't allow for that to happen. When the tenant was blindsided by, new evidence from the landlord, there's limited grounds to adjourn the hearing or allow them to get new evidence, but it's inconsistently granted. So three things that we want, right? Like one is we want the landlord to apply with supporting evidence to begin with, because they should already have that. And that will kind of cure the issue of the landlord not being clear. And it will also help curb bad faith evictions. And then two, we want the tenant to be able to provide evidence afterwards, after they had the opportunity to look at what the landlord said. And then finally, we want the RTB to grant adjournments or new evidence more flexibly to make sure people are actually being heard. In our data set, it's a consistent theme that tenants feel that they're being rushed in the hearing. They're not being given the opportunity to be heard. People are being cut off. So that's really something that we want to work on.
This is People First Radio. My guest is Vincent Shi. He's a staff lawyer with First United, an organization that aims to assist people living in the downtown East Side. They've put out a platform of proposed reforms to the rules for renters. They're calling for things like an end to pet bans and the right to install cooling in rental units. Called Inclusion, Fairness, and Stability: Advancing Solutions for the Right to Housing in BC, the full report can be found on the organization's website. So basically right now you're suggesting that the process to evict someone is you tell them they're being evicted, you maybe give some reasons, and then unless the person who is going to be evicted goes to the RTB themselves and is able to successfully fight it, that they will just be evicted. Whereas what you're calling for is that the landlord themselves needs to go to the RTB and have someone who's like a neutral arbitrator effectively say, yes, this makes sense. These are the grounds for eviction. And this is your opportunity to respond to this tenant. So basically, there would need to be a third party that kind of approves the process instead of a third party you can go to if you think it's somehow being unfair.
Exactly. And that just kind of protects the tenant and prevents a situation where they're kind of forced to kind of decide whether this is something they want to take on or not. Like I have a friend who went through a similar process, and at the end of the day, they're like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to go look for somewhere else, because it's just too much of a burden to carry. You know, they have a busy job. They kind of just want to move on. And that's, I don't think that should be a good reason for an eviction to happen willy-nilly, right? And again, I'm going back to Ontario, because they require applications for all evictions, and that's worked. It's shown that it's helped curb issues like that. And a similar thing happened with rent evictions in this province. So now, in order to evict a tenant for renovations, the landlord has to apply. That's kind of the only situation where the landlord has to do that. When that came in 2021, it lowered the amount of rent eviction cases that were before the RTB. So I think it will be really helpful for tenants and the RTB, who are the people that are receiving the caseload, right? I think if landlords understand that it's their burden to prove why they're evicting their tenant, like at the beginning, and that they need evidence, I think that would really help.
You're also calling for selective vacancy control between tenants. So the idea there being, if I understand it correctly, if I move out right now, as it stands, the landlord can set the new rent for the new tenant at whatever. But you're calling for basically, if someone moves out, depending on the vacancy rate in wherever this hypothetical unit is, if the vacancy is too low, if there's too much of a need for housing in that area, then you're suggesting the landlord wouldn't be able to sort of raise the rent whatever amount they wanted. Could you maybe explain how what you're calling for would work?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just a backgrounder. Currently, yes, we have rent control, but that's within a tenancy, not between tenancies. So rent control is tied to, it's what they call rent control tied to the tenant, as opposed to rent control tied to the unit. And so, yes, we are advocating to make this teeny step, right? Like what we already have with rent control within your tenancy should be applied to between tenancies as well. So all rent control for all situations, but it's not a blanket rent control because it is more flexible and it is more dynamic. And the model that we're proposing is rent pressure zone. So this is a model that Ireland has adopted. So the government would designate, if your location has a really hot rental market, it's under pressure. So for example, maybe the vacancy rate is really low. The average rent prices are higher than the overall national rent price, etc. Then the government comes in and designates a rent pressure zone for your area specifically, just for the time that the market is under pressure. And so when the zone is designated, there would be a rent freeze for the first 2 years just to cool things down. But then afterwards, it would just be rent control tied to the unit. And then once kind of the pressure is lower, then the zone would probably go away and it would go back to rent tied to the tenant. So what we're proposing is really kind of a middle ground because we've seen proposals, for example, in France, they kind of have a blanket rent control policy where rent is based on whatever the government determines is kind of the average for your size unit. And there's no determination between, okay, like, is your market hot or not? And it's just kind of a blanket rent control, which I don't think really is helpful. I think rent increases between tenancies is kind of where we're seeing the rental crisis happening. If you look at our law reform platform, within a 3 year period, I think it was like 2022 to 2024, if your unit had the same tenant the whole time, there would only be a total of 11, a 12% increase or something like that in rent. But if that same unit had tenant turnover every single year for the 3 year period, it would be something like 110%. So that's kind of where most of the unsustainable rent increase is coming from. And that's easily remedied with this policy.
So you're not calling for blanket vacancy control. You're calling for vacancy control in places where there's a really low vacancy rate. You're not calling for maximum temperatures in people's rental units. You're calling for the ability for them to put an AC unit in if they want to be enshrined in law. What's maybe been the response when you flag some of these things with decision makers, with people who have some political power?
Yeah, I mean, all of the things you mentioned, right? These are all achievable, doable things right now. There's the political will for it, and we've seen successful examples in other provinces and in other countries. So these are not kind of unachievable dreams that we have. These are important, but they're achievable. And these are important things that need to be addressed. Like, we are in a province with a housing crisis, with a climate crisis. And so the question is kind of, can we really afford not to do something about these things, like rent stabilization, for example, health and safety, for example, in terms of cooling and extreme heat? Like, these are things that need to happen, and government action is needed, to prevent unnecessary deaths and extreme heat. Unnecessary evictions. In our report, we've provided a lot of data to back all of these things up, and we invite government stakeholders to take a look and, take meaningful steps to make sure that, things are better for everybody.
When you talk about something like the ability to ban pets in a unit, and you suggest, in Ontario, the law is different. This is not something that you can do. Are there any obstacles you feel like in BC, or is there a reason like why they have done that in Ontario, and we have not made the change in BC? Is there any particular obstacle or reason you could point to?
Not that I know of. I think this might just be an example of inertia. Like things are existing how they are. And so sometimes it's easier to just continue with that. But I mean, I would highlight too with a pet example, like this is specifically something that the NDP had promised that they would do in the previous, in 2024, their election campaign. And I think, you know, has it been a year? Like, I think it's time for that election promise to come to fruition. And part of it too is like, you know, we're highlighting all these things. They're doable because, again, there are existing mechanisms that solve the issues that people are worried about, right? The pet damage deposit, for example, rent control, like it's not a blanket rent control. So I think all of these things are kind of one baby step forward. We're going from rent control from within the tenancy to between.
Vincent Shi, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Vincent Shi is a staff lawyer with Downtown Eastside service provider First United. We were talking about a platform the organization has put out calling for various reforms to the Residential Tenancy Act.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.